Okay, I think we can start. Good afternoon, Tzoraim Tovim. Thank you. I really appreciate everybody coming. I know it's not our usual time, and therefore it's not going to be our usual topic. And as I wrote, we're going to do an introduction to the 613 mitzvot. Why exactly I chose the topic? I don't know exactly why. I guess Shavuos wasn't that long ago. I think it's an interesting topic, and different things have come up. So we'll see how far we get. And of course, if you have any questions, just let me know. Okay, so why don't we start? How do we know there's 613 mitzvot in the Torah? We're going to try to discuss the origins. What does it mean there's 613 mitzvot? Perhaps get to the different levels of mitzvot, not just biblical and rabbinic, but within biblical law, the different sources of mitzvot, etc. So but why don't we start there? Why are there 613 mitzvot?
That's debatable.
It is debatable, as we're going to see, right? So this is, I parts of these things, what I'm going to say today, I think I've mentioned over the years, my classes, so part of it is review, whatever, which I always love. And but we'll see, we'll put it all together. So as we see, the fact that there's 613 mitzvot is one of the best known things in Judaism. I think if you walked on the street and you asked even Jews who are not, you asked your typical Jew who shows up to shul on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur 3 days a year, and you ask them how many mitzvot there are in the Torah, they'll tell you there's 613. I think, and most of them are going to know that. They can't tell you what Tekiyot de Meyushav and Tekiyot de Meumad is, or what Malchut Zichronot or Shofar are, or they can't necessarily name the five Tefillot on Yom Kippur, but they can tell you that we have 613 mitzvot. Everybody knows that. The problem is, it's everybody knows that, but until the 8th century, nobody cared about this at best. And as I'll mention now, there is no agreed upon list of 613 mitzvot. There's no list. There are lists of the 613 mitzvot, but they don't agree with each other. So we'll try to address some of that. But why don't we start at the beginning? So to the best of my knowledge, there are only two sources in rabbinic literature that in Talmudic literature that there are 613 mitzvot. So we'll start with the most famous one. I'll share my screen. That we'll start with. Let's just get it. The Gemara in Makot. This is the main source. Makot 23b. Masechet Makot is really a continuation of Masechet of Sanhedrin, and Sanhedrin, of course, talks about the court system, the courts of 3, 20, 3, 7, 1. The last half of the tractate talks about the four death, you know, sentences, how to carry it out. Even though in Makot, the Mishnah Makot tells us that the once in 7 years is a mean court to give a death penalty. Once in 7 years, Rabbi Kiva said he would have never. That's in Makot and Sanhedrin. You pretend, you read it, you know, they're giving death penalties, who knows, all the time. So it goes through the last 50 pages, pretty much talk about the four death penalties. The last chapter actually talks about all agadah. So that's the basis of the 13 principles of faith of the Rambam. The last chapter in Sanhedrin says these are the people who have a share. Everybody has a share in the world to come. And these are the people who lose their share in the world to come. And it's on that Mishnah that the Rambam writes his famous 13 articles of faith. Makot is a separate tractate nowadays, but it was, I think the scholars say it was really used to be one long tractate, Sanhedrin and Makot. Makot are lashes, because one of the penalties the court gives, again, in theory, I don't think this was actually done so often, but there are 207 of the 365 negative mitzvot that we're going to get to, right? 207 of those carry the punishment of lashes of Makot, which are 39 Makot, And Masechet Makot again deals with other topics too. Edim Zomim begins false, certain type of false witnesses, but it deals with the giving of lashes, especially on the third chapter. It's only 24 pages or 23 pages. It ends on page 24. Every Talmudic tractate starts at page 2, so there's always one less page. There's no beginning to and or end ending. So this is really mamash towards the end of the Masechet, a teaching of Rav Simlai. This is the basic source of what we call 613 mitzvot. Darash Rav Simlai. Rav Simlai, if I'm not mistaken, lived in the 3rd century in Israel. He's in a more living in Israel. Sheish meyot u'shlosh meyot mitzvot nemru lo le Moshe. There were 613 mitzvot that were told to Moshe. Shloshmeyot v'shishim v'chamesh lavim. There's 365 love, not negative commandments. Kiminyan yemot hachama. Just like there are 365 days in the year. The earth revolves around the sun every 365 days, more or less. So for every day of the year, there is a negative mitzvot. That's a very powerful idea that every day, you know, focus on a different aspect. I mentioned once before that, so I believe it's in the Zohar, they list off days. Now, I've never seen this inside. I actually should get to see it inside because what they list off are the Hebrew dates. But of course, the Hebrew dates are not 365. Only 354 or 384 if you're talking Adar Sheni. But let's say for Tisha B'Av, the mitzvah of Tisha B'Av is Eber Min HaChai. And whatever, so each one of the days. But the concept 365 negative mitzvot, because there are 365 days in the year, somehow the mitzvot are connected. And this is a very Kabbalistic, Zoharistic concept that the mitzvot we do or the sin we do have mystical, impact in the celestial beings in the whole world, is impacted by the mitzvot. So sort of the earth revolves around the sun because we refrain from these 365 negative mitzvot. Okay. Umatayim v'cham v'arba'im u'shmona asay, 248 positive. Kenegedev Rav Shel Adam, according to the limbs of the body, also mentioned, no one has yet been able to make a complete and accurate count what these 248 limbs are. There are we sort of know near 248. I don't think there's ever a listing. Eddie Reichman in his recent books, fantastic book on medical ethics, has a whole chapter on this, the history of trying to solve what exactly are these 248 limbs, but that's not our topic now. So again, 248 positive means, but also very important of significance, because it means that it's all the mitzvot are interconnected, just like our body, the heart. We have their major organs and less major organs, right? They're really important mitzvot, and they're less important mitzvot. We spoke last week, the Ten Commandments is more important than other mitzvot in the Torah. That's why it's in the Ten Commandments, so to speak, right? So they're vital organs and less vital organs, but still the body is one integrated whole, and our pinky is part of that whole system. So 248 positive mitzvot, because there are 248 limbs in the body. That's what Rav Simlai says. Very nice, very nice. What is waiting for the end of Masechet Makot, and why this has never been mentioned in the Mishnah? It's never mentioned in the Mishnah. We're now in the Gemara. So for sure, till the year beyond the year 220, nobody knew or nobody, it's never recorded that there's 613 mitzvot. Then he doesn't give a source. Amar Rav Hamanuna. So how do you know? Where does he get this from? That there's, where do they make this up? 613 is a very nice number. Where does it come from? Micra. Ooh, what's the verse? Interesting. So he wants to claim there's a biblical verse that backs up this notion of 613. Torah tziva lanu Moshe. This is towards the end of the Torah, Moshe's last speech. And this is in Besot HaBracha, the beginning of Besot HaBracha. Moshe commanded us the Torah, Morasha Kehilat Yaakov. It's a legacy, an inheritance to the Jewish people. So that's very nice. Where do you get 613 mitzvot? So Torah v'gematria, Torah in numerical values, the top is 400, the above is 6, and the hay is 5, so that's 411. Reish, 611. That's very nice. The word Torah is 611. Okay, great. So Torah tziva lanu Moshe, Morasha Kehilat Yaakov. Moshe commanded us the Torah. But Torah, what's Torah? I somehow, when I read this verse, I don't think Torah means 611. Right? That's also a very strange idea that we're going to derive from the word, because the gematria of Torah was the Torah Moshe commanded 613. Okay, it's a hint. Maybe they had a tradition, whatever it is. But this is not exactly a direct verse in the Torah telling us this. But that's Rav Hamanuna. You can find a hint, a reference in the Torah. No, that gets us to 611. Wow. What about the other two? Anochi v'lo yeh lecha mipi gurash ma'un. So there is a tradition that the first two of the Ten Commandments were said by God. Anochi, and it's written in the first person, Anochi, I am the Lord your God, who took you out of Egypt. You shall not have any gods before me. That's God talking. By as the run number three, by commandment number three, it's lo tisa shem. You shall not take God's name in vain. That you can, there's a switch in the person, and that's based on this. I mean, based on the psukim, Beth Ganon, that you said, wait, you want to mute yourself, please, otherwise I'll have to stop sharing, which I'll do in a minute anyway. So by number three, Moshe is talking, and that's our tradition. Our tradition that that the Jewish people got so nervous and so they couldn't take the power of God, so they asked Moshe to speak, and therefore God spoke the first two, and Moshe spoke the other eight, and then the other 603 regular mitzvahs, eight of the Ten Commandments, 611, two from God. Okay, very nice, but not so nice. I mean, nice, I don't want to say it's not nice. Very difficult. So what are some of the difficulties in this teaching, besides the gematria, the fact that we're doing this from a numerical source? Well, what makes this difficult? And I'll so you know what? Maybe I'll jump the gun. Let me share my screen a second. I'm going to show you something pretty wild. I think it's pretty wild. I've mentioned this in the past, but let's see it inside. Hasagot Haramban. Okay, so let me stop my screen for a second. So as we know, okay. Anybody know where you, okay, I said there's no exact list. There's no agreed upon list. There are lists. If you want to look for a list of the 613 mitzvot, you got so inspired by the shir, you want to memorize the 613 mitzvot. I tell my kids in chat, usually most years, I don't know if I told them this year, because it never will happen, never has happened, never will happen. If I tell the kids, if you can list off the 613 mitzvot, I'll give you 100 in the course. You can goof off the whole year. If you know the 613 mitzvot, you get 100. I say, you know what? Even if you get only 590, I'll give you, you know, a break. You have to sit down in one sitting. All right, 590 mitzvot. I for sure couldn't do it. I don't know. I'm not sure how many, I don't want to say Gedolei Torah can't do it. I don't know how many people alive in the world today can do this. So, Ricky said the Sefer Mitzvot of the Rambam. Correct. That's the source. He's not the first source. It's the first source is the Bahag, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. The Baal Halakot Gedolot. That's what is Yonah. We're not even 1,000% sure who he was. He was one of the Gaonim, the Gaonic period, 8th-9th century. He was the first one to list off the 613 mitzvot. The Rambam is probably the most famous listing. The Sefer HaChinuch is the, what I've mentioned many times, the best introduction to Judaism. If you're going to, I'll say something that we spoke, how the Rambam said, you only need one book in your life, two books. You need a Tanakh and the Mishnah Torah. That's the Rambam. So I'm going to say, if I'm going to accept the Rambam, which of course we don't, that you only need one other book in your library besides Tanakh, I'm going to say better than the Mishnah Torah, have a Sefer HaChinuch. If you only have one book in your library, make it Sefer HaChinuch, and then you'll have it brought over you 613 mitzvot. But the Rambam, that's hard for most people to learn all the Mishnah Torah. But anyway, but the Sefer HaChinuch is really a copy of the Rambam. He just follows the Rambam's mitzvot. But what the Sefer HaChinuch does is he does an order of the parshiot. So it's very easy. You look up every parsha, Balak, you know, Tzulchan, how many mitzvot there are. And, you know, so that's what we all know. In the Book of Bereishit, there are three. You know, in Kitetzi, there's 74. The Rambam doesn't list them by chronological or biblical order. The Rambam listed, nobody knows how the Rambam listed. We spoke last week, actually. See, everything ties into everything. You know, the first belief in God, and there's only God is unified, and the love of God, prayer. We understand the first 10 of the Rambam. Then it gets all complicated. Why does the Rambam go in this order? There have been PhDs written trying to figure out what the order of the Rambams of 613 mitzvot are. But again, that's not our subject for now, especially not in an introduction. So the Rambam wrote a list of the 613 mitzvot, and the Rambam had a real big problem. What was the big problem the Rambam had when he's writing the 613 mitzvot? His problem was, I'm sorry, there are more. There are 6 million mitzvot. Okay. I mean, how many mitzvot are there on Shabbos? There are 5,000 mitzvot on Shabbos. It depends. That's the problem. What do you mean 6,000? How in the world am I going to figure out 613 mitzvot? There's so many things that you have to do. So the Rambam lists off 14 principles 14 limiting principles. In order to be a mitzvah, it can't have any one of these four, or has to have whatever, you know, which way you're looking at it, these mitzvot. So the first thing the Rambam says, it can't be a rabbinic mitzvah. That doesn't count. Rabbinic mitzvah doesn't count. That God gave to Moshe, that's in the Torah. That's a Torah mitzvah. So that's a, then the second one, which is, gets rid of 99% of mitzvot. That's the first one. Okay. The rabbinic. So that gets rid of Hanukkah and Purim and all that other stuff. And Muksa. Okay. Then the Rambam gets rid of, 98% of biblical law. How does he do that? So the Rambam says anything derived, anything that's not an actual text in the Torah. I'm not interested what the rabbis derive from the text. If anything the rabbis derive from the text, reading between the lines, that's the majority, the vast majority of the Torah. That's the entire Talmud, reading between the lines of the Torah. So nothing, none of those count. If we have time, we'll discuss why none of those count. The Rambam doesn't count any of those in the Torah mitzvah. It's got to be a verse in Torah. So, for example, that there are 39 forbidden activities on Shabbat, that's not mentioned in the Torah anywhere. That's the rabbis reading between the lines. The rabbi said, oh, Shabbat is written next to the Mishkan, the tabernacle, and the tabernacle had 39 activities to run the tabernacle. It must be on Shabbat. They're 39. Very nice. But it doesn't say that in the Torah. And since it doesn't say that in the Torah, it doesn't count as a mitzvah, one of the 613 mitzvot. The most important question that I will see how much we discuss today, but to think about it, raised that again, another occasion is, so what? In other words, what does that mean? That means the 39 melachot are less important? In other words, what does it say in the Torah? Zachor yom haShabbat lekodesho. So that the Rambam says, therefore there's a biblical mitzvot. It's interesting to make kiddush. The Rambam interprets the word zachor. Zachor doesn't mean to remember. It means to mention, to liskor, lahaskir, to say. So you have to say, you have to sanctify the Shabbat. How do we do that? We make Kiddush. So that's a biblical mitzvah. But, or shamor, you have to guard. Oh, shamor, you have to, we can't do certain activities. I don't know what those activities are. Those are derived by the rabbis. But all the 39 activities, that's all one mitzvah. Of Shamor. So I don't, but what is, okay. So what does that mean? Why is that important? So the Rambam is faced with a very serious problem. Everybody's faced with a serious problem is how do we limit the mitzvot? So by getting rid of anything the rabbis derived, that gets rid of literally 98% of what we consider biblical law. And we have to raise the question, is something derived from the Torah of lesser status. We know a biblical law is of great status in a rabbinic law. That's what's just right at the beginning. Yes, we can be more lenient on a rabbinic law. That's a rabbinic law is less important than a biblical law, obviously. So the question is, and we know there's a hierarchy within biblical law. We know to eat on Yom Kippur is worse than to eat pork, you know. So do we say that anything written in the Torah is on a higher level than something derived from the Torah? That's an important question that people don't usually ask. I don't know. This stuff I don't think is taught in any yeshivas. I don't know. Did any of you learn any of this when you went to school? Was anybody taught any of this stuff? Okay. All right. I'm sorry to hear that.
Rabbi Kellner.
Yes.
According to the Rambam, so the 38 and the 39 of Malachas are Midrabanan.
No, I didn't say that. I said they, no, we consider them biblical law. That's the question. Is there a different status? But it's not one of the 613 mitzvot. So we haven't said, why does that matter? That's my question. Who cares? Who cares if it's one of the six? In other words, there are 5 million biblical mitzvot. So 613 of them get counted. So why is that important? Maybe it's not important, which is why maybe the Mishnah never mentioned it. Rav Sigmai is a nice idea. It was making a drasha. It's an agadata. You don't run or follow agadata. It's an agadic statement. There's no legal. We distinguish between halakha and agadata. So then, right, these are the questions I am raising. Now, there is one of the 39 halakha is mentioned directly in the Torah, and that is...
Fire.
Lotavar Resh Bakal Mushvadekram. So that's a debate. Why is that mentioned alone? Some say to make it less important. Havar Lalav Yatzad or the Chalek Yatzad. I don't get into the technical halakhic discussion, but my point is because it's mentioned and the other are not, it's different. The Gemara says that lighting a fire is different from the other 38 malachot. So we already see that if something's mentioned, that's how the rabbis understand it. If something is mentioned in the Torah, it's different than if something is not mentioned in the Torah. We have to figure out why and what. But I'm just going to raise a lot of the issue now. So let's go back to the Ramban, where we're discussing Rav Simlai 613 because of this Torah Tzivel and Moshe, and 365 Torah 611 and 2 said by Moshe. So let's just the difficulty in this thing. So let's go to the Ramban. So the Ramban writes the Mishnah Torah, and he writes an introduction. His introduction is the 613 mitzvot, because the Mishnah Torah is an explanation of the 613 mitzvot. So the Rambam has to give you he has to tell you what the 613 mitzvot are. Before he does that, he tells you, here are my rules. Here are my rules for making the 613 mitzvot. No rabbinic mitzvot. No mitzvot that are derived, that are not mentioned explicitly in the text. No mitzvot that the rabbis interpret the text. We assume an interpretation of the text is a biblical law, but it's not one of the 613 mitzvot. So that's what the Rambam, so he goes through 14 principles like that. Those are the two most famous ones, mitzvah klali, different principles the Rambam has. Okay. Now it doesn't apply for all time. That's why we'll get there later, maybe. So the Ramban, of course, I mentioned there's no agreed upon this. So the Ramban disagrees in 31 mitzvot. The Rambam and the Ramban disagree in 31 cases. But even before we get to what they disagree, which we're not going to get to today, I don't think, the most famous disagreement they have is on the mitzvah of living in Israel, where the Rambam, Maimonides, does not count living in Israel as one of the 613 mitzvot. The literature written on that, especially in the Zionist world, the religious Zionist, wait a minute, how can the Rambam not count it? The most important mitzvah in the world is to live in Israel. How could it be? So all kinds of, well, there's a ton of literature written on that. It doesn't mean the Rambam doesn't hold it's a mitzvah to live in Israel, but he doesn't count it as one of the 613 mitzvot. The Ramban sharply disagrees. The Ramban was the greatest Zionist of all evil authorities. But let's take a look how the Ramban, on this first of the 14 principles of the Rambam, of how to limit the 613 mitzvot, what the Ramban has to say on this. As far as, I just got this now, it is in English. Oh, Burke, I didn't think it was in English. Okay, but I'm going to read it in Hebrew. Amar Rav Moshe Bar Nachman Zal Minu Rega Dati. So I am now in the Iberian Peninsula, which is where the Ramban was in Catalonia, which we today call Spain. But when the Ramban was alive, Catalonia was not part of Spain. The Ramban would not have thought that he lived in Spain. Today, it's one country, although there's a separatist movement there, if you follow the news a little bit. But he lived in the northern part of Spain. The Rambam was born in the southern part of Spain. Anyways, Catalonia. So, okay, so here, finally, writes this introduction, though. Where is it? So now let's go. Okay, Haikar Rishon, Mina Mar Mar Hishiv Harav Hagadol. The first principle that the Rav HaGadol, that is the Rambam, Zal, al bal halachot gedolot. Okay, so, I'll get back to that. The term shetchila deberim levavi binyan hazeh. Before I speak from my heart, shetchila deberim levavi binyan hazeh, in this matter, omar shema shenista pekli, I have to tell you what I'm in doubt about. There's something that I'm struggling with. I don't really know. Before I give a whole discussion on the Rambam and debate with him and analyze the 613 mitzvot, I have to tell you something that bothers me. Apa pishia dati, even though I know that the entire world, shako machzikim bo kedavar pashut, everybody in the world knows as the most basic teaching of Judaism, this is the Gemara, the end of Makot, Darash Rav Simlai. The Rav Simlai says there are 365 negative mitzvot, and 248 mitzvot, and Rav HaMenuna said it's derived from the verse Torah, Steve Elena Moshe. Everybody knows that. Hikshua Torah, Toria, Anochi, fine. Ine, Apal Pi, Amim Rabba, Balachot, Umanan Achad mitzvot, okay, I have to skip that part. Uskam Bein Kol Mine HaChakamim Talmidim. Every wise scholar, they need Parsim Bahamon. The average person, like I said, walking on the street to shul on Yom Kippur night, ask any Jew how many mitzvot are in Torah. They'll tell you 95% will know they're 613, even if they haven't been in shul since last year on Yom Kippur. Shezes gum ha-mitzvot, benit kabru bo shirot, piyutim, vazarot nimim. There are all kinds of poems. Rav Sadia Gaon wrote a poem with the 613 mitzvot that they have. All kinds, shirim, piyutim, vazarot, beautiful. About what the 613 mitzvot. Mehem lechachmei svarat rabot beretz andulas, Andalusia, Kasher, Hiskir, Harav, Zal, Me'embar, Tzarachorot, Bechopinot, Nakola, anywhere in the diaspora, everybody writes, everybody talks about the 613 mitzvot. And the Kvar Mar Harav, Shezed, the Varshaloi, Sakeloto, Achad, Mikom, Mishan, Mitzvot. There's not even one person of all the hundreds of people who list the mitzvot, right, who made all these songs and things, but not one of them thought they were not 613. It's like a weird number. Like if you, you know, what are the odds? Like 613, you know, like right? So every single person agrees there are only 613 mitzvot. But me, Mr. Ramban, Rav Moshe ben Nachman, living in the 13th century in Catalonia, Allah believe safek. I don't know. I'm not sure. Amemra. Im hiti v'yakol is first of all, Rabbi Menuda says it. What does Rabbi Akiva say? What does Rabbi Shmuel say? What does Rabbi Yehuda Nasi say? Rabbi Simon, he's a very nice rabbi. Remember, he's not like, if I'm going to ask you who are the most famous, 10 famous Talmudic rabbis, he's not going to be on your list, right? So, oyesh bom machloket. Maybe 100 other rabbis, they disagree. That's one doubt. V'sapek acharim halach alamoshe mishinai. In other words, it was this idea that the 613 given to Moshe, Klamar Shenamru LeMoshe. In other words, Moshe was told, I want you to know, here's the Torah. There's 613 mitzvot here. Kach lechach mitzvot ani moser, I'm giving you. Oh, asmachta ba'alma. No, it's just, an asmachta means you have a pre-existing law or a pre-existing idea, and you look for a verse that gives you a hint, but the verse doesn't teach you the verse. You know the law and you go back to find the verse. That's what we call an asmachta. I'm leaning my learning on something, but that's not what the verse really means. Just, it's a hint. Some say it's a mnemonic device. It reminds me, Torah 613, but that's not where I learned it from. Mina Gematria, Zuzucha Cham Rabbi Shimla Hotoresh Matzah Mitzvot, that he found this, etc. Okay. Umashe Miviotili De Safek. Well, I'll tell you why. One of the reasons I don't know if this is true. There are many arguments if something is obligatory or something is not obligatory. We don't have to go through them all now. He points out here, Rabbi Akiva says it's a mitzvah. Rabbi Yishmael says it isn't a mitzvah. So he quotes three examples. Asota, what's the other? By slaves, interesting. And Tuma, that's the one that is pertinent to us. Is a Kohen obligated to be Tameh for a relative? We know that a Kohen is not allowed to come in contact with a dead body, but we also know he is allowed to come in contact with a dead body if it's one of his seven relatives. So the question is he allowed to or is he obligated to? So Rabbi Akiva says he's obligated to. That's a mitzvah in the Torah. To impurify yourself. And Rabbi Shimon, no, it's not a mitzvah. The Torah allows you. So the Ramban is bothered by the fact. So why does the Gemara not say, ooh, according to Rabbi Shimon, now we only have 612 mitzvah or 610. He gives three examples. And then because the Gemara does it all the time. When you learn Gemara, he learns this from this verse. What does he learn from? Oh, he learns that from that verse. So how does this first person learn that idea? He learns it from another thing in that verse. So what does the second person do? What does he do with that part of the verse? And the Gemara goes back and forth trying to figure out what everybody's learning from the verses. So I don't get it. And such a basic idea. Why is the Gemara never, ever bothered? Why does the Gemara never say, whoa, according to Rabbi Yishmael, we don't have 613 mitzvot. What mitzvot does he add? Because he says this is a mitzvot. The Gemara never, ever did that. So that's why the Ramban is in that. He goes on. We don't have time not to read the whole thing, but I didn't even realize it was in English. I'll just share again. But you go on Safaria, I think. Where is it? The English shows up. You know what? This part isn't in English, right? That's what I thought. Right? Just his introductions in English. Okay. Right? They didn't do the whole thing in English. Let me see here. I don't know, you can check maybe. Yeah, this part is in English, but none of the rest is in English. Yeah, they don't have it in English. Okay. Anyways, okay. So that's one problem. There's a second problem with this Gemara, we'll say. Torah Tzivalenu Moshe. So there's a cute problem, okay? How do we get that? Torah 6:11, and God said the first two commandments. So we know, of course, I know I say the Ten Commandments, but we know that's, of course, a misnomer. It's called the Seret HaDibrot, the Ten Sayings. Why is it not called the Ten Commandments? Why are the Ten Commandments? What's wrong with calling it?
Because there are more than ten in there.
because there are more than 10 commandments in the 10 commandments. That's kind of cool. Like, when, you know, when was the War of 1812? You know, like, right? How many commandments in the 10 commandments? I think the Sefer HaMelech is 14. 14 commandments. And guess what? The first two, I think, have four. What we call the second, and there's a debate. Oh, so even if God said the first two, quote unquote, that's the first two dibrot, but that's not the first two mitzvot. That's four mitzvot. Right? And Shabbat, and even if Moshe said eight, hold on, Moshe said nine. He may have said eight dibrot. Zachor et yom haShabbat is one mitzvah. Sheishet yomim tavuah v'asid lo ta'aseh malacha tamin chavitcha, whatever. That's the positive, zachor. And Shamor, forget the Shamor later on in the second step, but work for 6 days and rest on the seventh day. That's the negative. So the mitzvah of Shabbat has two commandments. So the whole thing doesn't make any sense. In other words, it's the Gemara is combining mitzvot and dibrot, and they're not the same. In other words, the first, even if it's true, the first two dibrot were said by God, that doesn't make it 6, 11, and 2. It just makes it 6, 0, 9, and 4, or when, you know, whatever. That's A. B, what do you mean God only said the first thing? That's Rashi's view. That's a big machloket. I think the Ramban himself, I didn't have time to check now, but I'm pretty sure it's the Ramban who disagrees. Says, no, God said all 10. If you look in the Torah, the people come to Moshe after the 10 commandments. And I mean, so Rashi say, okay, it happened in the middle, but the Torah didn't want to interrupt the asserted dibrot. Whatever it is, the whole thing is very, is it only going according to the opinion of Rashi? So that's a very strange idea of where we're learning from. So you could say again that that's why Rav Simlai didn't give that limud Torah. He just said it on his own. Rav Amnuna is coming along. So it's an asmachta. If it's an asmachta, no, it's not really what the verse means. So that's not the exact, the idea. Okay, you can sort of give it teirutz, you know, you can kind of kvetch something out, but it's clear that's not the clear meaning of the verse. I think the greatest difficulty of all is the continuation of the Gemara, which is, I've shared this Gemara. I don't know when the last time I shared it with online with everybody here. I never did, but it's probably in my mind the most difficult Talmudic passage there is. You know, it's kind of like the most difficult Rambam there is that the Rambam says, I remember in high school already, one of my high school Rebbeim told me all the difficult Rambams, you know, that all the Rosh Yeshiva spent and Rav Soloveitchik spent his whole life answering difficult Rambams, is the most difficult Rambam is how can the Rambam say, the chutzpah of the Rambam to say you need only two books. My book is the Mishnah Torah. You need a Torah and my book and no other book. That I remember one of my high school Rebbeim said, that's the most difficult Rambam. Forget all the other Rambams. How can the Rambam say such thing? So this is a Gemara that's like mind-boggling. So the Gemara began, Rav Simlai says there's 613 mitzvot. Yeah, not really. That's the Orthodox Jews. That's the ultra or the old fashioned Jews. The modern Jews, David HaMelech, you know, it's only 3,000 years ago instead of 3,500 years ago. But David, he said there are only 11 mitzvot, not six. He made only 11 mitzvot. And we went through this once, actually, I believe. And if you keep going, let's see, where are we here? Yeshayahu said, there are only six mitzvot. Hamidan al-Shesh, there are only six. And goes through what they are. And Micha comes and there are only three. There are only three mitzvot. And forget 613, right? This is a little bit famous. Micha's idea is a little famous. What is God, Higilach Adam Matov, what's good? What does God want from you? God only wants three things. Asot mishpat, do justice. Love kindness, don't you? You do justice and you love kindness. Obviously, if you love kindness, you'll do kindness. And be modest. That's all. That's what God, he doesn't ask you to keep kosher. And that's when this other stuff. Just ask you these three things, right? So this is wild. Now, if you don't believe what I'm saying, because I don't believe what I'm saying either exactly, although that's what it sounds like the Gemara says. So we'll take a look at Rashi. Let's see here. I got to move this thing here because it's blocking. I know you can't see it, but I don't think you can see it. Let's say Rashi. So Rashi says something unbelievable. I'll read it in Hebrew so you won't believe me. Okay, So David HaMelech came and he made 11 mitzvot of the 613. Shebetchila hayut tzadikim. The people in the desert, you know how righteous they were. They never complained about anything. You know, the Jews, and that they left Egypt, they were amazingly pious. Right? Okay. They could accept many mitzvot and their high moments, right? The Jews, the Nasev and Nishma, unbelievable people, they could accept everything. They saw so many miracles. About Dorot Achronim, the weaker generation, they weren't so righteous. If you're going to ask people to keep 613 mitzvot, tafasta maruba lo tafasta, right? That's an expression. If you ask for too much, you get nothing, right? If you try too much, you got to, a little bit. If you, you know, don't push too hard or you'll blow the whole deal. You put in a price too high, you won't get it. Tafasta muat, take a little bit of the profit. Ein lecha adam shez zokeba. Nobody can keep them all. But so David HaMelech came and he said, okay, don't worry about the other ones. Just worry about these mitzvot, these 11 mitzvot. Of course, these 11 mitzvot, by the way, are pretty much all between man and man, but that's a whole other discussion maybe for Tishrei. So this whole Gemara is very fascinating in a sense. And it's clear it's not really a literal idea, learning. I mean, the Gemara is, we need a lot more time to go, but just a throw out this amazing Gemara at the end of Makot. And that's the source of everything. And now you know why the Ramban is a little bit skeptical. So he goes along with it. Okay, there's 613 mitzvot. So, you know, so let's, I'll quote there. There's one other Talmudic source that I'm aware of. I remember I said there were two. There's one other Talmudic source that says there's 613 mitzvot. And that's a Gemara in Masechet Shabbat. It, there is, I told you the cute story on the Vilna Gaon, right? The Vilna Gaon, when he was 5 years old. Again, I don't know if any of these stories are true, but nobody says this about Jake Hellman. I can guarantee you nobody will ever say this story. But Jake Hellman, when the Vilna Gaon was 5 years old, on the second day of Pesach, he took out a Masechet Shavuos and he started to learn, prepare for, there's, you know, Pesachim, Rosh Hashanah, Yom HaSukkah, and Shavuos. So they told them, they smiled, all the older people smiled, the little baby Rabbi Eliyahu, nice, cute, precocious 5-year-old kid, but Rabbi Eliyahu, Eli, you know, you don't know. Shavuos doesn't talk about the holiday of Shavuot. It talks about a Shavuah, talks about an oath, Shavuos, Shavuah, Neder Shavuah, not Shavuot, the holiday. So, you know, like, you know, that's very cute. And the Vilna Gaon got them one up. He says, of course I know that. What do you think I am? Of course I know that. So, I mean, I'm paraphrasing. I don't know what they said, but this is, you know, sorry. Nishpa va'ome mihar Sinai. God made us take an oath at Mount Sinai. So the idea of Shavuos, taking an oath, the most important oath is the oath to keep the Torah. So Masechet Shavuot is the most appropriate Masechet for Shavuot. And then he added in the Vilna Shas, the Vilna Shas, called Vilna Shas, but Vilna Shas printed in the 1800s. So you can't say in the Vilna Shas. But I imagine in the Shas of the time of the Vilna Gaon, he says, there are 49 pages in Masechet Shavuot. Isn't that cute? There are 49 pages, like Sfiras Omer, that's the origin of Daf Yomi. Where do you think Daf Yomi comes from? Right? This story of the Vilna Gaon. Okay, anyways. But that's, there is no Masechet on Shavuot, but the discussion on the holiday of Shavuot is in Masechet Shabbat, the holiday. So let's just take a very quick look. This, to my knowledge, is the only other place where the Taryag Mitzvot is mentioned anywhere in the Gemara. So the Shabbat 87. Everybody see it? Or you're not blocked, right, by what I'm blocked with, right? So the Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu did three things on his own. It's pretty wild Gemara. Let's see if I can get to the beginning. Kind of Rabbana. No, let's see. I don't want to. Moshe Rabbeinu, I don't like the way it's set up. Okay. Moshe Rabbeinu hosted Yom Midato, that before they got the Ten Commandments, or whatever you want to call them, Moshe, you know, there's a debate. Did they get the sixth of Sivan, the seventh of Sivan, the fifth of Sivan? The how many days they have to prepare? So the Gemara wants to claim that Moshe added an extra day from God on his own. Moshe Midato. Moses added one day on his own. He didn't ask God's permission. Tanya, shlosha dvarim asa Moshe midato. Three things Moshe did without asking God. V'iskim akadosh baruch hu. And after the fact, God, great job, Moshe. That was great. Hosif yom achad midato. He added an extra day. Piresh Minesha, he's separating from his wife. That's last, you know, they complained, why did you separate from your wife? Vishavar and Haluchot, and he broke the tablets. God said, Yashiko, Yisharko, Shishaparta. So the Mark goes through these three things. How do we know Moshe did this? It's also fascinating that Moshe did this on his own without asking God. God's right there. He's the rabbi. He can make decisions. Torah lo b'shamayim me. I make decisions. Shavarta luchot. How did Moshe come up with this? Like, on what basis did he make these things on his own? Amar, Uma Pesach, here you go. Shuachan mit taryag mitzvot. Having a core Paschal lamb is only one of the 613 taryag mitzvot. Amrat Torah ko ben nechar lo yokabo. A foreigner, a non-Jew, is not allowed to eat from the Korban Pesach. A Torah kula, the entire kula, the 613 mitzvot. Israel mishum adim, and the Jewish people are apostatizing. That's a big thing here in Portugal, where, you know, the Inquisition and, right, Israel are mishumadim, alacha kama kama. How much more so do I have to not give them the Torah? I can't give the Torah to a bunch of people worshiping an idol. I mean, now in this scheme, HaKadosh Baruch, I don't even know if God agrees. And Amar Shir Shibarta. God tells Moshe, write the, tov lecha, what's the pasuk? Tov lecha. Something at Luchot Asher
Shibarta.
No. That's a different pasuk. This is in Perek Lamed Dalet, pasuk Aleph, I believe in Shmot. Ktav lecha. You write at Luchot Asher Shibarta that you broke. V'amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says a play on word. Shibarta Yishar Kochecha Shibarta. Yashar Koach that you broke them. Anyways. So that's the only other reference that I'm aware of in the Talmud, that there's 613 mitzvot. Okay, in the few minutes that we have left, let's try to talk about this a little more. But everybody accepts it, as the Ramban writes. Everybody who writes mitzvot assumes there's 613. So the first one I mentioned was the Bahag. You notice the Ramban alluded to that. I said I'd skip that paragraph. So I won't do it inside for the purposes of time, but the Bahag, I mentioned Balachok Adolot, one of the Golim. So what are the first mitzvot? I said the Rambam writes that there are 613 mitzvot. The first principle is you don't count rabbinic mitzvot. So the Rambam says, you know, I didn't have to tell you that. That's so obvious. Obviously, Torah, Tzivah, Lena, Moshe. What God gave to Moshe, obviously, are biblical laws. Obviously, you don't count rabbinic laws in the 613 mitzvot. I don't make a whole principle, but I have to do it because there was this guy. He is such an Amma Aretz. He's the most ignorant rabbi I ever met in my life. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little, but actually maybe I'm not exaggerating as much as a thing. This rabbi thought that you can count rabbinic mitzvot as part of the target. So this rabbi, this Bahag, this Bala Alachot Gedolot, he counted Neiros Chanukah, Netilat Yadayim, Megillat Esther, making a bracha, he counted them as part of the taryag mitzvot. Is he crazy? I can't believe anybody could do such a thing. The Rav Soloveitchik gave a whole yortzeit shir, I believe 3 hours shir, explaining the position of the Bahag. Not that he agrees with the Bahag. That was the beauty of the Rav. You know, the Rav would give you a 3 hour shir on Beit Shammai's opinion. We don't follow Beit Shammai, but who cares? In the world of the Brisker Torah, we're not care about practice. Torah is a description of God, emanations from God. So Beit Shammai, I don't care if we don't follow it. You have to understand Beit Shammai. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah applies equally to Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. I'll say another thing that Rav pointed out, right? You asked me for rabbinic and biblical mitzvah. That's, I said, of course, the biblical mitzvah is more important. But let's say like this. You can study Hilchot Purim or you can study Hilchot Shabbos. What has a greater mitzvah of Talmud Torah? To study Hilchot Shabbos, that's a biblical mitzvah. Or to study Hilchot Purim, that's only rabbinic mitzvah. Where do you get the greater mitzvah for the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? Somebody, please say something. And therefore, what's greater? Shabbos. To learn Hilchot Shabbos, greater mitzvah of Talmud Torah? What do you think? Is it? I only have an hour a day to learn. So I can learn about Ona, I can learn Lotignov, or I can learn about Hanukkah. I can learn the Shai, I can learn a Rebbe, I can learn about the rabbinic custom to give the Meiser Ksafim. Let's assume that's only a rabbinic mitzvah, to give 10%. Or I can learn about not to overcharge. That is a biblical mitzvah. So do I get a greater mitzvah of Talmud Torah if I learn about the biblical mitzvah? So you would think what?
Yes.
Yeah, so of course the answer is no, obviously, right? That's the rest said, no, that's in practice. And when you go, yes, the biblical mitzvah, but once you're learning Torah, everything becomes a chefza of Torah. That's, I believe, how the Rav, that's his basically explaining the Bahag. A rabbinic mitzvah becomes part of the Torah, rabbinic explications of the Torah, lo kasur, the mitzvah to listen to the rabbi. There's no, right, so that there's no greater mitzvah of Talmud Torah to study Beit Hillel over Beit Shammai. To study Beit Shammai, even though we know from the beginning we're not going to follow Beit Shammai. To study Beit Shammai is the exact same mitzvah of Talmud Torah as there is to study Beit Hillel. Now, it could be that there's a separate distinction that the Briskers don't like, but Rav Schechter liked, to learn things that are practical and to learn things that are not practical, or halacha lemaisa, but that's not the same as Beit Hillel Beit Shammai. It's a little bit different. Like to learn whatever, to learn Shulchan Aruch or to learn Gemara. What's more important? So that, yeah, Rav Avadya say, many would say to learn halacha, don't learn Gemara, whatever it is. But I'm saying in Rav Soloveitchik, the build is, it has to be that way. When every time I'm going to learn Torah, oh, this is only a rabbinic mitzvah. I don't want to learn it, but I want to get a higher mitzvah, Talmud Torah. That's like insane. So yes, once it's part of Torah, it's a part of the mitzvah. I think it's also, it's a beautiful idea. When the rabbis say something in Torah, that becomes part of the Torah Moshe. It's the same mitzvah of Talmud Torah is learning what God said, the Ten Commandments. Whether God said it, Moshe said it, or Rabbi Akiva said it, or the Rambam said it, or even Jake Kellen, maybe, I don't know. Some says it, that becomes part of Torah, and that's the same mitzvah, I don't want to say by me, okay, by other people, whatever. So that's an interesting idea. So the Bahag, when he lists the 613 mitzvot, includes seven mitzvot that are rabbinic in nature. So you see already, this is like a fascinating topic. It's a topic for... what the 613 mitzvot, but it's really such an interest. I find it so interesting and fascinating. We don't have these agreed upon lists. The Rambam really rips the Bahag to shreds. As you know, the Rambam didn't mince words. The Rambam, it's why we don't follow the Rambam. Yeah, he never quotes other opinions. That's the Rambam. That's the Rambam. He was great. It's a great, probably if I could meet any one rabbi in the last 2,000 years, it would probably be the Rambam. If I could go, who would I want to meet the most? Probably the Rambam. I'd have to think about it a little bit. So that's really quite something. But the assumption again, of course, we have 613 mitzvot. Now, what he didn't discuss, so let's discuss very briefly, what's the difference between Torah Shebichtav? What is the difference between something written in the Torah and something derived from what's written in the Torah? The 39 malachot are not written in the Torah, or 38 of the malachot are not written in the Torah. So what is the difference? In other words, the original question they asked, why does it matter if there's 613 mitzvot? Why does it matter if something is counted as a mitzvot if we have to do it? I understand rabbinic and biblical, because rabbinic, if you're in doubt, you don't have to do. I get all that. But why do we do that? Why does it matter within biblical law, within something written in the Torah and something that's derived from the Torah? Who cares? I have to observe the other 38 malachot. And you know what? In Sanhedrin, in theory, if you cook on Shabbos, they'll give you a death penalty. Of course, not in practice, but in theory, it doesn't say in the Torah you can't cook. It's true. The rabbis derive it, but that's a biblical law. You violated the laws of Shabbat. Death penalty. End of story. Right? So why does it matter? Anybody?
Why does what matter?
Why does it matter if something is counted as one of the 613 mitzvot? Who cares? Who cares that cooking isn't? So this is an idea that I must say I've never seen this anywhere. It's my own idea, which means it may be totally wrong. I've asked a few people this question. No one's given me, most people, I'm talking, I don't mean, I mean, ask people, I mean, you know, people who have learned, like, are learned people. People, you know, people, I haven't asked, I didn't ask Rav Shakta this question, but I've asked, and, you know, other learned people, very learned people I come across, and I say to them, why does it matter? And they're all like all stumped. They never really thought of the question. Like, who cares if it's one of the 613 mitzvot? We have to follow all the biblical law, right? What difference does it make? So the answer, I think, to me, I think the answer, and everybody I've told this answer to, they haven't argued with me that I'm wrong. Oh, that's interesting. I never thought about that. So it's like this, because the basic thing is, and this I heard from Rav Shechter many, many times, is that when it comes to a drasha, when it comes to reading between the lines of the 39 melachot, it's true, it's a biblical law. Biblical, there's a difference between rabbinic legislation and rabbinic interpretation. Rabbinic legislation to have Purim, to have Hanukkah, Muksa, that's rabbinic legislation, not to eat chicken and milk. Those are all rabbinic law. The rabbis don't claim this is what the Bible says. The Bible doesn't say this. Bible says you can eat chicken and milk. But we're going to put a fence because we're afraid you're going to make an error. But that's biblical legislation. That's rabbinic legislation. Everybody agrees that's rabbinic law. Rabbinic interpretation, when it says in the Torah, keep Shabbat, the Torah doesn't tell us how to keep Shabbat. So the rabbi said, this is what the Torah means. Ah, so that's Torah law. When you have to, you learn Shakespeare and say, this is what Shakespeare means. So that's what Shakespeare said. It's not like he didn't use those words. He doesn't have to use those words. The poetry, you know, you allude to words. The Torah is poetry. The Torah self-describes itself as poetry. So the Torah doesn't, as rabbinic interpretation becomes biblical law. So there should be no difference. What's between biblical interpretation, what the Bible says? The difference is, Shakespeare. You can have two English professors who disagree. Was Merchant of Venice anti-Semitic or not, right? Whatever I am, I can disagree on everything in Shakespeare. I told you the story once with Rabbi Riskin when he was, I believe, at Hebrew University in the early 60s. So he took a course in Hebrew literature. And at the end, they were doing a piece on Agnon. And they had to analyze some story of Agnon. And they presented it. Three people presented, I guess, the paper on Agnon. And Agnon was sitting in the audience. Shai Agnon was sitting in the audience. So each person gave three different interpretations. So they asked Shai Agnon, which one is right? And Shai Agnon smiled. And I don't know if he knew or again. And when they went to Rav Soloveitchik and they asked the Rav Soloveitchik after his fancy explanations of the Rambam, this is a little bit different, but it's the same idea. Do you think the Rambam really meant that? Do you think the Rambam really meant what you said, that whole long thing? And Rav Soloveitchik says, it doesn't matter. If you can interpret that in the Rambam, it's good enough. If you can interpret that to me, Rambam means, that's fine. That's a pretty, we'll leave that aside, but we know interpretations vary. So the same thing is in Torah. What is machloket all the time? Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Shmuel, we just saw three arguments. So interpretations vary. So we today accept the notion that there are 39 melachot. But let's say you have a Beit Din that says there are only 28 melachot or 44 melachot. So you know what? The law is going to change. The problem, the reason people don't think like this is because for the last 2,000 years or for the last 200 years, I want to say even Reform Judaism, we have all been taught the Torah never changes, right? Everybody's been taught that. So yes, the words of the Torah never change, but the interpretation of the Torah change all the time. We today don't have the power to uninterpret or reinterpret the way the Talmud would interpret something. Why we don't have that power is for another shiur, but that's the assumption. But in theory, when we have a Sanhedrin, that's why people want to recreate a Sanhedrin. That's why in 1948, Yehuda Leib Maimon wanted to recreate it. We have a Jewish state now. We have to look at the Torah anew. You know, we lived 1900 years without applying these laws. We got to bring the Torah up to the modern world within a halakhic framework, of course. People are very pious, very learned. We're not talking about, you know, to make it easy. We just have to apply into a modern state. But you need a Sanhedrin. You need a real Sanhedrin to do that. So if you had a real Sanhedrin, they can reinterpret the Torah. So it could be that when we have a Sanhedrin, there won't be 39 melachot on Shabbos. And it could be, There could be less. There'll be more. They'll derive it from another source. And this is true in every mitzvah. And you have this in the Gemara all the time. Mishnah Rishon and Mishnah Achrona. The early sages said this, and the late, no, we disagreed. And Halacha follows the later sages, where everybody, you're allowed anybody who's authoritative enough can disagree. So therefore, it's very important. That's why the Rambam makes a big deal. Anything derived, because the Rambam is the Torah can never change, of course. And so the Rambam says any one of the 13 that's derived from the 13 principles, that's interpretation, that can't be a mitzvah, because mitzvah are permanent. The 613, Torah Tzivah and Moshe, the Torah that God gave to us, is permanent, never changing. It's the essence of God. God never changes. It's perfect. It cannot change one iota. That's what I mean, be quote unquote an Orthodox Jew, right? But the interpretations of the Torah, that can change. So if the interpretation of the Torah can change, that can't be one of the 613 mitzvot. So I think that, why is it important? The 613 mitzvot means it's permanent, la'olam v'ad, forever. And everything else, now we've been following this everything else for 2,000 years without changing it. That's why it's a little bit tricky. So that's why I think, otherwise, who cares if something is part of the 613 mitzvah? Okay, there's a lot more to discuss, but it's 1:57 where you are and 6:57 where I am. And so let's just do a very quick review. And please, God, we'll see you next week, 9:30 a.m. at our regular time, back on the Siddur and back in the middle of Shema. But I do greatly appreciate all of you who did come at the, you know, I very much appreciate it. I know I'm not in your regular schedule, but at least in the summer, hopefully it's a little bit easier. Okay, we raised the question, where do we know there's 613 mitzvot? So the rabbis and the Talmud, this was, and the Mishnah, this was no concern. They never even ever mentioned it. It's mentioned in two places in the Talmud. Both are a gadic statement. They're not legal statements. And the Ramban says the Gemara never takes them seriously, because when Rabbi Akiva or Mishmael argues this a mitzvah, the Gemara never asks, well, what about, where is he going to fill the mitzvot? So the Gemara never took the discussion so seriously. There's some agadic position, and was even how they derive it is very strange. 611 and 2, that's not really 2, because really the first two commandments are really 4 mitzvot, and maybe God said all of them, and the context of the Gemara is not about Taryag mitzvot, it's about 6, 13, 11, 6, 3, 1. It's about how Torah sort of evolved over the generation, not so much teaching us, but knew that we have that concept. Then we have the concept that by Moshe Rabbeinu breaking the Luchot, because the Jews were not, by doing Avodah Zarah, they violated all 613 mitzvot. And the Ramban says, even though I'm a little bit, I'm not so sure there's 613 mitzvot, but every single person who counts the mitzvot, came at 613, and I'm going to go with that, even though I'm going to disagree with the Rambam, what the count are. And then I'm explaining, why is this important? Who cares if there's 613 mitzvot? In other words, this is now making them into something important, at least based on the Rambam, is because anything that's 613 mitzvot means that can change. That'd be the fact that the Rambam says the way we count 613 mitzvot is only things that are written in the text itself and not biblical interpretation, because interpretations can change. We may not have that authority, but please God, we will one day. And the Torah might look very different, and people will find this is not unorthodox. Orthodox is untraditional. That's also great. Whatever. I don't want to hold the other, the discussion. It's, whatever. Everything, the modern world changed things. So denominations, that's not a Jewish concept. There's one Torah. No, I'm a Reformed Jew. I don't have to keep that. That's ridiculous. Jews are Jews. We all have the Torah. Some people kept less of Torah. Some people kept more. This is, modern terms, unfortunate, that it would be better to live in a post-denominational age. You have Jews left, like, in Lubavitch, you know, that's their whole, that's the greatness of Chabad, that they're Jewish people, we're all one, they don't, anyways, okay. But that's how the Ramban says why it's important. We have so many of the 14 limiting categories. We didn't discuss really, we have to discuss within Torahship, within the Torah, there's different levels, written Torah interpretations, takana, minhagim, and please, well, maybe one day, maybe when I travel again, we can continue. But thank you very much. I see there's a hand up. Fruma, you want to ask something?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the right question, if I understood you correctly, but I just wanted to ask you, I was just thinking, because I just listened to a lecture by Herschel Schachter recently, do you think that he would say that the significance of the 613 you know, midaraisa, you know, let's say whatever they are, you know, since there's a difference of opinion as to what they are, that their significance is in implementation in terms of prohibition, that the prohibition of one of the 613 is a sort of more serious than a prohibition of a rabbinical.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying a biblical interpretation has the same status if something's written in the Torah itself. We will give somebody in theory a death penalty for writing on Shabbat or cooking. The difference is that an interpretation can change over time, and what's written in the Torah can't. So in that sense, something written in the Torah is of higher significance. Or if you want to get in halachic terms, it has an extra kedusha, you know, the letters of the Torah, that's all different idea. But so what I'm saying is we assume biblical interpretation is biblical law. It has the same status, and that's why there are millions of mitzvot. They're not 613 mitzvot. But
yeah, I was only talking about the interpretation. I wasn't talking about learning. Yeah.
Yeah. By learning, there's no difference even between rabbinic mitzvot and biblical mitzvot. To learn Hilchot Chanukah, you fulfill the biblical mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I see somebody's writing a whole thing about Salazar and Portugal and the dictatorship. Portugal was neutral during World War II. I'm not reading the whole thing. Portugal, if you got to Portugal, you were saved. We went to the museum yesterday. Mende saved 30,000 people. He got arrested and they made his life miserable after that. And after he died, you know, they resurrected him. But, you got to Portugal, your life was saved. Nobody died in the Holocaust that made it to Portugal, including the Lubavitcher Rebbe who made it to Portugal. Portugal stood alone, right? Grounding rights, right? Okay, paradoxically, the country that many Jews can, in fact, it was a fascist state. It was a dictatorship during the war. That's the crazy thing, right? It was. Salazar, till 74, Portugal only became a democracy in 1974. But this was the place to get to. If you could get here in World War II, your life was saved. Okay, a mitzvah to listen to the rabbis. Rabbis were not to state, that's true, not to state that one mitzvah is more important than another, unless you fail to observe that. Yeah, you shouldn't state that, but mitzvot, some are more important than the others. That's what we said. They took out the certainty brought, so people wouldn't say the most important, but we know they're more important, less mitzvot. 248, organs of the body. They're vital organs and less vital organs. And eating on Yom Kippur is a greater punishment. Violating Shabbat, you get a death penalty. Even eating on Yom Kippur, you don't get a death penalty. So clearly some mitzvot are more important. Ooh. We should treat them, when the rabbis say, heavy zar v'mitzvah kalakum, or pretend, treat a light mitzvah like an important mitzvah. It means it's not as important, but you should pretend it's as important. In our attitude towards it, it should be very important. But if there are conflicts, you have to know what you can do.
Don't
fear if we become very, very strict like the current Islamic rulers, Jews could enforce the mitzvah with extreme. I sure hope not. That's another discussion. No, I don't. I mean, I think that would be terrible. I think what the rabbis are saying is that we don't want to get death penalty. You're right. The biblical law says put death penalty, and the rabbis minimize that. I would hope that would never change. I would hope the rabbis wouldn't become like that. But you never know. Listen, unfortunately, we're living in a world of extremism, and you see it in the Jewish world, too, and I'm not happy about that. But okay, 613 are categories. That is true. That's a whole other discussion. All thousand is going to be placed. Yeah, okay. If you can't place it within the 613, okay. That could be, but then the question becomes, why are those 613? Why are those the ones that are important? The true matter, the Sadrach Gaon says something else. He said the 613 mitzvot, the Ten Commandments, asserted brought our categories. And each one of the 613 mitzvot can be placed in the asserted hadibrot. I'm not sure people, you know, so he even goes a step further, that everything emanates from the asserted hadibrot. But it's something, okay, I have to think about that. I think what you're saying, there is a lot to what you're saying, Zoom user. Then they have to say why these and not those, but I hear you. Thank you. Everyone agrees on the 39. Yeah. Today, everybody agrees on the 39. I thought the later rabbis. Yeah. I understand totally what you're saying, right? For 2000 years, there's hesitant change. I totally get all that. I'm not talking that word, but let's say we're back in the Talmud. There were debates. there were debates about all these things. And then the halacha got codified. It really depends who becomes the members of our Sanhedrin. I think people will tell you that with a state of Israel, you need radical changes in halacha. Like, Rav Herzog was more, I mean, I'm not an expert in this. Rav Herzog believed that we really have to reevaluate. That doesn't sound good. Rav Herzog was very committed to halakha, but there's certain things we do. Like Rav Herzog said, we're bound by the United Nations. We can't go destroying churches. You can see how an extremist rabbi could say that Jews should destroy all churches in Israel. It's not so hard to find sources in the Torah to say such a thing. God forbid we would do such a thing. That would be terrible. That'd be terrible. Okay. Maybe you consider me unorthodox. Okay, fine. I'm guilty as charged if that's what makes one orthodox. But, Rav Herzog said, we can't do that. We're part of the nation of the world. There's certain norms. So, we know there's certain things. The rabbis already did away with certain mitzvot. Ir nidachat, they did away with certain things. You don't have to, that's, how did they do that? But so I'm not convinced that, it's very hard to imagine rabbis obviously changed 39 malachot. When we have a real Sanhedrin and the Jewish people are united and work and we have real problems, we're going to solve the Aguna crisis. A real Sanhedrin could solve the Aguna crisis. They can, they didn't have people 2,000 years ago who wouldn't give their white a cat. Because if they did, the Beit Din would force them or even kill them. The Rambam says you can give a person a death penalty. So we can't do that. So that they had other methods to solve. We don't have those methods today. So we'd have, the rabbis would have to recreate them. But we don't have that Sanhedrin. Okay, so it is getting late. I have to make Shabbos soon, actually. 45 minutes. Okay, thank you very much. Yom Canada Sameach. Okay, very good. Thank you very much. And please God, we will see you all next week, 9:30 at our regular time. And Shabbat Shalom and all the best. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.